Thank you, Dr. Rush. It's a privilege to be here. The only thing I would say is a disclaimer. I'm a nutritionist, not a reproductive biologist. So that means I can dummy down what I'm saying so I can understand it. I thought it was ironic that Rick was on talking about nutrition, and he's a reproductive physiologist. I'm on talking about reproduction, and I'm a nutritionist, but I guess that's the way it goes. It's a little humbling to be on a program with so many good speakers. I actually crossed paths with Amanda when we were at Purdue, and I've been impressed with her ever since. She's a fantastic scientist. I've known Rick for a long time, and he's obviously, renowned. He has his own heifer development, the Funston method, named after him, and so I don't know how many people have that, but it's truly great to be on here with these guys. I was feeling pretty sorry for Rick on his travel log. Having to go to Hawaii and Brazil in the same year, I feel bad. But I want to talk to you about some stuff that I guess I get excited about from a research standpoint. I'm pretty passionate about, and that's the nutritional impacts on AI. I love breeding cows. I love heifer development and that sort of thing. And so I'm going to try to put together a story of my thought process and how I got to the research. So kind of bear with me. I want to talk about selection. I really think the heifer development AI results, it starts when you select them, on the type of females you're selecting. And I really believe that. If we do a good job of selecting, I'm going to show you a data slide later in this slide towards the end. And I blocked out the locations, but our results vary dramatically between ranch. And I'm convinced, depends on how well people are selecting bulls for maternal traits. And I think that plays a huge role. We can get carried away selecting, chasing carcass, looking at quality, growth, those sorts of things. But if we don't take care of maternal traits, I think it'll catch up to us. And I'll show you some examples of that. So Steve and I were in Casper yesterday at the stock growers meetings, and we were talking to about 15 people there. So it's kind of nice that there's a big audience today. But we got to talking about businesses and that sort of thing. And all of us are in the beef business, whatever form it is we're in, because we enjoy it. We have a passion for it. But if we're not making money at it, and I apologize, my pointer is not going to show up out there, it's just a hobby. So even though we love it and we're passionate about it, we better be making money at it. Otherwise, we got to have a job to support our hobbies, much like I do roping. But if we're not making money, and it starts with heifer development. If we're not selecting heifers that will make us money, we're making a mistake. So, as some kind of general guidelines, we want to select heifers that are born early in the season. There's a lot of good data out of Nebraska showing this. The heifers born within the first calving cycle are going to lifetime have more productivity than heifers born later in the season. They're going to reach puberty earlier. There's a relationship between age of puberty and postpartum interval, so they can start cycling after having a calves quicker. As a general rule, we want to retain 15-20% more heifers than we need, because we're not going to get them all bred. It's just not going to happen. And we don't want to retain heifers with structural defects. We see that all the time, and Rick and I kind of started this meeting a few years ago trying to grow the cow herd, talk about heifer development. More cows now developed off of that. One of my concerns with that is that because she's a female, she ought to have a calf, is kind of sometimes our mentality. And I understand when we're trying to grow a cow herd and stuff like that, we want to keep everything we can, but I really think if we're not keeping productive animals, it's a mistake. We need to be more selective in our culling keeping process. So what's important? Maternal traits. I think I put this slide in here on purpose, but every time I see that Hereford cow, it reminds me of a joke. So my family raises Hereford cows, so there's a disclaimer. I feel like I can make fun of them now. So what does it mean when you pull into a driveway and you see a Hereford bull standing there? It means grandpa's still alive, right? Now, what was that? Yeah. Well, I love Hereford cattle, and so I feel like I can make fun of them. But we certainly want maternal traits, right? We want females that are going to take care of a calf. We want females, and I'm going to kind of go through a list here. We want them to look like females. Maternal traits are what's going to make us money. When we spend a lot of time looking at bull catalogs and looking at those big, powerful bulls, and I'm as guilty as anybody, we got to take care of maternal traits. We got to remember that, as I said, she's got to make us money. The role of every cow is she's a calf-making factory, so she's got to be able to make us money. She's got to have good instincts. She needs to. What's good milking ability mean? Well, it's different in Wyoming than it is in South Dakota than Nebraska, and so we got to have good milking ability for our environment. Okay, and she needs to be reproductively efficient. Fleshing ability. There's that Hereford cow again. We need a cow that will put on weight easily. Okay, now we don't want it to be because she doesn't milk at all. But in our country, she's got to get out and forage, and she better put on weight easily, because there's a lot of reasons why, when we start talking about body condition score and productivity, that she needs to put on weight so we can maximize her production potential. Fleshing ability, really important. Body capacity. Some of these are terms that if anybody's spent any time in an animal science department, these are judging terms, right? You see those judging kids walking around with their hands behind their back talking to themselves, practicing. And these are the terms they're using: capacity, structural integrity. Well, they all have a reason. There's a reason that judges started out liking these. We need her to be able to eat a lot of food. We need her to be able to carry a big calf. So we need to select heifers that have capacity. Structural integrity. As I said, I think oftentimes we keep heifers because they're a female, or we keep a cow because she's bred. Really, we need to be calling a little deeper than that. I thought this is a pretty telling stat. Less than 2% of the cows in the United States are culled because of structural defects. I think, again, just because she's bred is not necessarily the reason to keep her in your herd. How about the feminine look? I think that's really important. So I need to take a second and point out that the little redhead in the upper left, there's my daughter showing her show heifer, but not a bad heifer. I mean, she's pretty deep. Maybe she's not the breed you want, but she's pretty deep. Looks like a female. Looks like she's got some capacity. Structurally pretty correct. And since it's my daughter, I'm not going to be too nitpicky on it. I thought she looked pretty good. Here's a picture of my wife. So kind of goes along with that feminine look. I think she's a real pretty lady. That's why I chased her. I like my heifers really pretty, too. I mean, they need to look like a female. There's a lot of good data that shows that females that look like females and males that look like males are more productive. Rick will tell you he's got some slides, and I think he's spot on, but looking at scrotal circumference and masculinity and how that relates to age at puberty and femininity, there's a direct relationship there. And age at puberty is, we know, related to scrotal circumference. So if we select for those more masculine-looking bulls, we're going to have more feminine-looking daughters, and they're going to be more productive. Somebody told my wife that I used my slides, her picture of my slide, referring her to a heifer, and she's pretty used to it by now. But her comment was she's just glad I didn't talk about her having capacity or easy fleshing ability, you know. Here's some just kind of guidelines. We want heifers to reach puberty by 12 to 13 months of age. And I think if you look at some of the data, they're probably reaching puberty maybe a little bit earlier than that by now. We want them to conceive by 15 months of age, calve by 2 years. A lot of economic data out there to show us that calving by 2 years of age is the most profitable system. So I'm not even going to touch this subject. Heifer management plays a huge role in how they're developed, and there's multiple ways to get there. And I just want to point out two of the most common, 60 to 65%. That's probably what we were always taught growing up. Rick has showed us some data, and I believe it's right on, too, that we can lower input heifers in the 55% body weight range and save a little money on it. So I think these are two really good strategies. And, again, I'm not even going to talk about which ones I think are right. This is what I want to talk about now. So I've kind of – maybe this is just filler, but let's get to what I really want to talk about. 80% of the U.S. herd are spring calving herd. Most of those heifers that we develop are put in a dry lot. Now, this is a feedlot that I work with up north Douglas, Wyoming, and there is nothing prettier than seeing 1,000 uniform solid red heifers in a pen or looking down a feed bunk like that. Or when you see them come into heat, 1,000 heifers cycling like that, and they're all uniform, the most uniform set of heifers I've ever seen. But in my mind, here's a little bit of a problem. Okay, they're fed right here at the bunk. And they're fed a really high-energy diet. Now, in parts of Wyoming, I'm not saying you shouldn't do this because, snow is an issue for us, and there is no winter feed to graze. So we've got to feed them somewhere. But my problem is what do we do with them after we breed them? What are we doing to that heifer once we turn her out into this pasture? So I think there's something that we forget. And this row here, if it doesn't show up good, we've got some calves in a feedlot, and they're on a high concentrate diet. So think about the energy intake of that diet. It's pretty high. Now, we've always been taught that green grass is really good. Best feed out there, get those cows on there. Well, it is really good, and it's probably good enough to meet the requirements, but it's not as good as this diet was that we just had them on, right? So I want you to notice this data slide here. This is from George Perry at South Dakota State. And what they did is develop these heifers either in the range or in a feedlot. Okay, and then they turned them out on pasture on the same day. So I really want you to notice this first bar that I've highlighted here. Look at the weight change difference. This gray bar is the ones that were in the feedlot, and they're put out in the same pasture as the bar right next to it. So they're on the same grass, same feed, and this is only a 2 or 3 week period of time. But look at how much weight they were losing. That's 3 pounds per day. This one is gaining 2 pounds per day. Okay, so you think about those heifers in a feedlot eating that high concentrate diet, and we turn them out on a pasture. First of all, the grass isn't as good. Second of all, they're out on a pasture, so they're running around. They're pretty excited. They're burning more energy than they probably should be. And they're chasing grass. Grass is just coming up, and they're chasing it. So they're expending way more energy, not eating nearly the calories that they're used to. And it's for a very short period of time, but I think it's having huge consequences. So I probably should have reorganized these slides, but up to this point, in my education growing up, I was always taught all these different heifer development strategies. What's our post-AI strategy? What do you do? Well, this is what I was taught. When we're breeding them, we don't want to stress them, right? Because we got to get conception, we got to have maternal recognition of pregnancy, then we got to have implantation. So if we're going to truck them, we want to ship them before 7 days. So we want to ship them in 3 to 4 days, put them out on grass, and leave them alone. And put them on that pasture you got, because that's the best nutrition out there. So up to this point, that's what I was always taught, okay? So some of the anecdotal evidence that I've seen, we do a lot of synchronization studies. We've done some multi-state studies with Pfizer. And so we bred a lot of heifers over quite a few years. And this started kind of clicking with me. When we're in a feedlot and we're feeding these heifers really good, they cycle really well. We can get a phenomenal synchronization response. We can have 90% of the heifers actually come into heat. But our conception rates are going from 40 to 70%. And so is it the green grass. So this is the data slide I was going to tell you about. Now, to eliminate doubt in your mind, most of these locations have the exact same breeders, same breeding crew. Okay, so we take out the guys know how to breed cows. They know how to watch heats. It's the same crew. But look at the difference in locations here. This is that herd I was telling you about that for generations has done a fantastic job selecting for maternal traits and taking care of the cow herd. We routinely get pushing 70% conception rate on their heifers. This group here was a set of heifers that were developed really well. They were grown on a feedlot diet. We had 85-90% of them respond to the synchronization. So that means they came into heat. But our conception rates were down here 20-30%. I mean, that's embarrassing for us, for the guys that bred them. And it's kind of hard to tell the guys how we did. I want you to ignore the three bars because it was a synchronization study, so those are different treatments. So what I want you to pay attention to is just kind of the average that each one has. But that's the variability that we're seeing. Now, in this particular set, I happen to know them, and they're feeding them in a feedlot and then putting them out on grass. I mean, trucking them the day after we breed them. This particular set, they do are in a feedlot, but they're a really high forage diet, mostly silage, triticale silage. And then they're turning them out on grass, and they breed a little bit later, so the grass is not quite as washy, and it's better than maybe mountain pastures would be. So I think that plays a role. This one, they're going from a really high concentrate grain diet to the mountain. And so I think that's real problem. So George Perry and I from South Dakota got to talking about this, and he gave me a bunch of data. He's kind of been working in this area. And so he gave me this data on years worth of data. I think there's 1,000, 1,500 heifers in this set. But what he did is had weight change or body condition score change. So the nutritionist in me took that data, I converted it to a megacal basis on how much condition they would have actually lost, and I came up with this chart. And so what I want you to notice is I made it just like a checkbook. If it's in the black, that means they're gaining, and if it's in the red, that means they're losing weight. So, for instance, these heifers were all at condition score 5, And if they were gaining weight between the time we bred them and 30 days later, our conception rates were almost 20% higher. So, and I know you're familiar with the body condition score data saying if we got cows in poor condition, they don't breed as well. These cows are in the exact same condition. So we're talking a three-week period where they were losing weight, okay? This one, same thing, condition score 5.5 to 6.5, we're seeing that 15 to 20% increase just because of the plan of nutrition. Now, I can't really explain that last bar on the right. If you're familiar with the data at all, we know that fat cattle, we can't get them bred as well. I'm not exactly sure the physiological response. We see the exact same thing in this data set. Heifers that are kind of pushing obese, if they're losing weight, they actually bred back a lot better than if they weren't. So some of my colleagues, Alan Bridges at Minnesota, George Perry at South Dakota, we kind of got together and started talking about what's going on here. What can we... Let's test this hypothesis that we have. Our hypothesis being that if we take the plan of nutrition on these heifers and change it right after we breed them, that we're going to affect nutrition or conception rates. Okay, so we only fed these animals for 21 days. So this is one cycle, okay? What we did is we developed all these heifers in the... I mean, they're all university cattle, so they're all controlled. We had them in the feedlot, and we fed them to gain about 1.5 pounds a day throughout the wintertime. So our gain treatment, we kept them gaining 1.5 pounds a day after we bred them, kept them on the exact same diet. Our maintenance diet, we dropped those cattle down so that they weren't gaining weight, they weren't losing weight. So trying to represent going to pasture, right? It's probably meeting their nutritional needs, but it's not as good as it was. So we dropped them down. And then we had another treatment where we dropped them down a little bit below that. We did this at a couple different locations. Average daily gain, and I put these couple slides up here just so you can see that we are targeting. We kind of hit what we were targeting. The cattle that we expected to gain were gaining anywhere between locations 1.5 to 2 pounds a day. Maintenance cattle weren't really gaining anything, and the loose cattle were, in fact, losing weight, which translated to a body weight change. So look at our first service conception rates. Now, the first thing that people notice when they see this slide is the gold bar is Purdue. The brown bar is Wyoming, and the black bar is the averages. Those guys at Purdue can breed cattle better than we can at Wyoming. Well, we actually sent one of our guys out there, same type of deal, same crews. So I'm not exactly sure why they got such better, but it did get me thinking. You know, we go around and give these synchronization talks, and people will undoubtedly come up to me and say, you know, you're talking about getting 60, 65%. We get 75, 80% every time. And in my mind, I'm thinking, man, that's fantastic. And in I say to them, that's fantastic, but in my mind I'm thinking, that's BS. maybe it's true. Maybe if our management is just right, maybe we can breed cattle or get cattle to conceive better than we actually think we can. Look at Purdue's data there. I mean, they got 90% per service conception rate. Granted, it's a small data set. I mean, they only had 50-something heifers in there, and we had 100. We've repeated this a couple years and got very similar results. But what I want you to notice is not the difference between location, but look at the difference between the diets within locations. So the gold bar to gold bar and brown bar to brown bar, our magnitude of difference is exactly the same. We're seeing almost a 20% difference in conception rate when we go from that diet where we kept them on the same plane to if we drop them to a maintenance diet. And it was the same at both locations. Now, to me, what's even just as telling is if we didn't get them bred that next cycle, our second service conception rates were terrible on that maintenance. So whatever physiologically we're affecting them so that they wouldn't breed the first time, we're not getting them bred the second time either. So it could have tremendous impacts as far as setting us back. You know, when we talk about AI programs, it's an investment. You talk about some of these synchronization protocols, and we put in 3 shots in a cedar, earned them $18 before you even put semen on top of that. So it's an investment. So for you to not get those calves bred is huge. And then when we talk about weight at the scale when we wean them, to be putting us back 2 or 3 cycles is really huge from a payday standpoint. So our total AI conception rates, obviously higher in the gain groups. And even our season-long pregnancy rates, some of those heifers just never truly recovered. And we had a 10% difference in conception rates over the season. So tremendous impacts. So the next question, let me back up a minute. So being an extension guy, so we do the research on farm and everything's perfectly controlled. So the next question is, how does this work in the real world? So I found a guy that develops heifers in Wheatland, Wyoming. We had 750 heifers on this study, and it was a pretty good sales pitch on my part to get him to talk him into leaving half of his heifers in the feedlot, because you think about cost per day, and he doesn't know if I'm full of it or not. So, but we did. We kept half the heifers in the feedlot. The other half we shipped to grass the day after we bred them. And you'll see almost the exact same trend. And now, I mean, somebody could say, did shipping play a role? Certainly it could have. I mean, we shipped them in the most optimal time that we could. But we had almost that, 15 to 20% difference in conception rate on the cattle that we kept in the feedlot. Kept them on the exact same diet that they were on before we bred them. So then the next question is what are we doing? How are we impacting fertility and what are we affecting? Are we affecting actual fertilization? Are we affecting the development of that embryo? Or maybe maternal recognition of pregnancy? So our next study, we designed a study where, if you'll notice from my last data set, I probably failed to point it out, but there was no difference between the maintenance diet and the losing diet. Right? The maintenance and the 80 of maintenance were exactly the same. So in my mind, it doesn't seem to make a difference of how much they're losing. It's the fact that the plan of nutrition went down. And maybe they weren't actually losing weight, but they weren't as good as they were. That, to me, is what seems what's important. So we designed this study where we kept them, we did the exact same thing. Developed them on a diet, gaining a pound and a half a day, kept them on the exact same diet. And when we got out here to breeding them, we dropped half of them off. As I've said, you can tell that this was a slow day at the office. I had a little extra time on my hands. But what we did in this study, we bred them, and 6 days later, we flushed them. So we wanted to look at that embryo, see if we're affecting embryo development, how that's being impacted, okay? So what? I don't know if you can see this slide or not from the back, but the stage of development was significantly impacted, where the cattle that were kept on the same plane of nutrition had a more developed embryo than those that were not. Embryo quality, if you're familiar with freezing embryos or transferring, we grade them, and there's actually a whole quality grade between the cattle on the gain versus the lose. If we get out here to total cell count, which makes perfectly sense, the gain cattle had more cells in their embryos because they were developed further. And likewise, they had a higher percentage of live cells. So to me, the amazing thing about this is this was 6 days. Okay, we flushed these cows at 6 days. So they were only subjected to a change in diet, a lowering of their nutritional plane for 6 days, and we flushed them, and we can see these significant results in those embryo quality. So we're having a huge impact on how we feed these cattle. So if we go from a feedlot diet to grass, that change is huge. And metabolically speaking, we're causing a huge train wreck. We don't exactly know what's going on yet. You know, whether I don't think it necessarily is fertilization. Seems to be that we are developing that embryo, and we haven't done enough research yet to tell you if it's maternal recognition of pregnancy or not. So I threw this slide in just because one of my thoughts as moving forward, this is from an old data set looking at the difference in condition score of cows, but we know that thin cows versus fat cows, we have what we call an uncoupling of the somatotropic axis. It's hormonal. It could be hormonal. IGF plays a huge role, so we're not getting that increase in IGF due to a growth hormone response like we would if we kept the plane of nutrition the same. I mean, that's just kind of guessing here. We haven't done any research to conclude that, but it's one possibility. So kind of some conclusions from this. Unquestionably, nutrition impacts reproduction. We know that we're affecting those embryos as short as for 6 days, we're affecting the quality. Now, obviously, we don't know if they would have what the difference in conception rate in that study would have been because we flushed them. But it's, to me, really telling that we can see that much difference in just 6 days of diet change. For those of you that have not been to Wyoming recently, these are the new welcome signs you'll see at the border. We actually, Steve Paisley and I were out on a drive one time on an oil field and came around the corner and saw that. So apparently oil field traffic gets a little fast. But with that, I'll be around tonight, so I'd be happy to answer any questions.